pointing down a stone passageway, which was the only way on. All they could hear, apart from their footsteps, was the gentle drip of water trickling down the walls. The passageway sloped downwards, and Harry was reminded of Gringotts. With an unpleasant jolt of the heart, he remembered the dragon said to be guarding vaults in the Wizard's Bank. If they met a dragon, fully grown dragon, Norbert had been bad enough.
Can you hear something?
Harry listened. A soft rustling and clinking seemed to be coming from up ahead.
Do you think it's a ghost?
I don't know. Sounds like wings to me.
There's light ahead. I can see something moving.
They reached the end of the passageway and saw before them a brilliantly lit chamber, its ceiling arching high above them. It was full of small, jewel-bright birds, fluttering and tumbling all around the room. On the opposite side of the chamber was a heavy wooden door.
Do you think they'll attack us if we cross the room?
Probably. They don't look very vicious, but I suppose if they all swoop down at once... Well, there's nothing for it. I'll run.
He took a deep breath, covered his face with his arms and sprinted across the room. He expected to feel sharp beaks and claws tearing at him any second, but nothing happened. He reached the door, untouched. He pulled the handle, but it was locked. The other two followed him. They tugged and heaved at the door, but it wouldn't budge. Not even when Hermione tried her Alohomora charm.
Now what?
These birds. They can't be here just for decoration.
They watched the birds soaring overhead, glittering. Glittering?
They're not birds. They're keys. Winged keys. Look carefully. So that must mean...
He looked around the chamber while the other two squinted up at the flock of keys.
Yes, look. Broomsticks. We've got to catch the key to the door.
But there are hundreds of them.
Ron examined the lock on the door.
We're looking for a big, old-fashioned one. Probably silver, like the handle.
They seized a broomstick each and kicked off into the air, soaring into the midst of the cloud of keys. They grabbed and snatched, but the bewitched keys darted and dived so quickly it was almost impossible to catch one. Not for nothing, though, was Harry the youngest seeker in a century. He had a knack for spotting things other people didn't. After a minute's weaving about through the whirl of rainbow feathers, he noticed a large silver key that had a bent wing, as if it had already been caught and stuffed roughly into the keyhole.
That one! That big one! There! No, there! It's got bright blue wings! The feathers are all crumpled on one side.
Ron went speeding in the direction that Harry was pointing, crashed into the ceiling, and nearly fell off his broom.
We've got to close in on it!
Harry called, not taking his eyes off the key with the damaged wing.
Ron, you come at it from above. Hermione, stay below and stop it going down. And I'll try and catch it. Right now!
Ron died. Hermione rocketed upwards. The key dodged them both, and Harry streaked after it. It sped towards the wall. Harry leant forward and with a nasty crunching noise, pinned it against the stone with one hand.
Yes!
Ron and Hermione's cheers echoed around the high chamber. They landed quickly and Harry ran to the door, the key struggling in his hand. He rammed it into the lock and turned. It worked. The moment the lock had clicked open, the key took flight again, looking very battered now that it had been caught twice.
Ready?
Harry asked the other two, his hand on the door handle.
Mm-hmm.
They nodded. He pulled the door open. The next chamber was so dark, they couldn't see anything at all. But as they stepped into it, light suddenly flooded the room to reveal an astonishing sight. They were standing on the edge of a huge chessboard, behind the black chessmen, which were all taller than they were and carved from what looked like black stone. Facing them, way across the chamber, were the white pieces. Harry, Ron and Hermione shivered slightly. The towering white chessmen had no faces.
Now what do we do? It's obvious, isn't it? We've got to play our way across the room.
Behind the white pieces, they could see another door.
How?
I think
We're going to have to be chessmen.
He walked up to a black knight and put his hand out to touch the knight's horse. At once, the stone sprang to life. The horse pawed the ground, and the knight turned his helmeted head to look down at Ron.
Do we, have to join you to get across?
The black knight nodded. Ron turned to the other two.
This wants thinking about. I suppose we've got to take the place of three of the black pieces.
Harry and Hermione stayed quiet, watching Ron think. Finally, he said,
Now, don't be offended or anything, but neither of you are that good at chess.
We're not offended. Just tell us what to do.
Well, Harry, you take the place of that bishop, and Hermione, you go there instead of that castle.
What about you?
I'm going to be a knight.
The chessmen seemed to have been listening, because at these words, a knight, a bishop, and a castle turned their backs on the white pieces and walked off the board, leaving three empty squares which Harry, Ron, and Hermione took.
White always plays first in chess,
said Ron, peering across the board.
Yes, look!
A white pawn had moved forward two squares. Ron started to direct the black pieces. They moved silently wherever he sent them. Harry's knees were trembling. What had they lost?
Harry, move diagonally four squares to the right.
Their first real shock came when their other knight was taken. The White Queen smashed him to the floor and dragged him off the board, where he lay quite still, face down.
Had to let that happen,
said Ron, looking shaken.
Leaves you free to take that bishop. Hermione, go on.
Every time one of their men was lost, the white pieces showed no mercy. Soon there was a huddle of limp black players slumped along the wall. Twice, Ron only just noticed in time that Harry and Hermione were in danger. He himself darted around the board, taking almost as many white pieces as they had lost black ones.
We're nearly there. Let me think.
The White Queen turned her blank face towards him.
Yes. It's the only way. I've got to be taken.
No!
That's chess. You've got to make some sacrifices. I'll make my move and she'll take me. That leaves you free to checkmate the King, Harry.
What?
Do you want to stop Snape or not?
Ron!
Look, if you don't hurry up, he'll already have the stone.
There was nothing else for it.
Ready?
Ron called, his face pale but determined.
Here I go. Now, don't hang around once you've won.
He stepped forward, and the White Queen pounced. She struck Ron hard around the head with her stone arm, and he crashed to the floor. Hermione screamed, but stayed on her square. The White Queen dragged Ron to one side. He looked as if he'd been knocked out. Shaking, Harry moved three spaces to the left. The White King took off his crown and threw it at Harry's feet. They had won. The chessmen parted and bowed, leaving the door ahead clear. With one last desperate look back at Ron, Harry and Hermione charged through the door and up the next passageway.
What if he's...
He'll be all right,
said Harry, trying to convince himself.
What do you reckon's next?
Oh, we've had Sprouts. That was a devil's snare. Flitwick must have put charms on the keys. McGonagall transfigured the chessmen to make them alive. That leaves Quirrell's spell and Snape's.
They had reached another door.
All right.
Go on.
Harry pushed it open.
Oh.
A disgusting smell filled their nostrils, making both of them pull their robes up over their noses. Eyes watering, they saw, flat on the floor in front of them, a troll even larger than the one they had tackled, out cold, with a bloody lump on its head.
Glad we didn't have to fight that one,
Harry whispered, as they stepped carefully over one of its massive legs.
Come on,
I can't breathe.
He pulled open the next door, both of them hardly daring to look at what came next. But there was nothing very frightening in here. Just a table with seven differently shaped bottles standing on it in a line.
Snape's, what do we have to do?
They stepped over the threshold, and immediately a fire sprang up behind them in the doorway. It wasn't ordinary fire, either. It was purple. At the same instant, black flame shot up in the doorway leading onwards. They were trapped.
Look!
Hermione seized a roll of paper lying next to the bottles. Harry looked over her shoulder to read it.
Danger lies before you, while safety lies behind. Two of us will help you, whichever you would find. One among us seven will let you move ahead. Another will transport the drinker back instead. Two among our number hold only nettle wine. Three of us are killers, waiting hidden in line. Choose, unless you wish to stay here forevermore. To help you in your choice, we give you these clues four. First, however slyly the poison tries to hide, you will always find some on nettle wine's left side. Second, different are those who stand at either end, but if you would move onwards, neither is your friend. Third, as you see clearly, all are different size. Neither dwarf nor giant holds death in their insides. Fourth, the second left and the second on the right are twins once you taste them, though different at first sight.
Hermione let out a great sigh, and Harry, amazed, saw that she was smiling. The very last thing he felt like doing.
Brilliant! This isn't magic, it's logic. A puzzle. A lot of the greatest wizards haven't got an ounce of logic. They'd be stuck in here forever.
But so will we, won't we?
Of course not. Everything we need is here on this paper. Seven bottles. Three are poison, two are wine. One will get us safely through the black fire, and one will get us back through the purple.
But how do we know which to drink?
Give me a minute. Danger lies before you.
Hermione read the paper several times. Then she walked up and down the line of bottles, muttering to herself and pointing at them. At last, she clapped her hands.
Inside. Got it! The smallest bottle will get us through the black fire towards the stone.
Harry looked at the tiny bottle.
There's only enough there for one of us. That's hardly one swallow.
They looked at each other.
Which one will get you back through the purple flames?
Hermione pointed at a rounded bottle at the right end of the line.
You drink that. No, listen. Get back and get Ron. Grab brooms from the flying key room. They'll get you out of the trapdoor and past Fluffy. Go straight to the owlery and send Hedwig to Dumbledore. We need him. I might be able to hold Snape off for a while, but I'm no match for him, really.
But Harry, what if you know who's with him?
Well, I was lucky once, wasn't I?
Said Harry, pointing at his scar.
I might get lucky again.
Hermione's lip trembled, and she suddenly dashed at Harry and threw her arms around him.
Hermione!
Harry! You're a great wizard, you know.
I'm not as good as you,
said Harry, very embarrassed, as she let go of him.
Me? Books and cleverness. There are more important things. Friendship and bravery and... Oh, Harry, be careful!
You drink first. You are sure which is which, aren't you?
Positive.
She took a long drink from the round bottle at the end and shuddered.
It's not poison?
No. Oh, but it's like ice.
Quick, go, before it wears off.
Good luck. Take care.
Go.
Hermione turned and walked straight through the purple fire. Harry took a deep breath and picked up the smallest bottle. He turned to face the black flames.
Here I come,
he said, and he drained the little bottle in one gulp. It was indeed as though ice was flooding his body. He put the bottle down and walked forward. He braced himself, saw the black flames licking his body, but couldn't feel them. For a moment he could see nothing but dark fire. Then he was on the other side, in the last chamber. There was already someone there, but it wasn't Snape. It wasn't even Voldemort. Chapter 17. The Man with Two Faces. It was Quirrell.
You?
Quirrell smiled. His face wasn't twitching at all.
Me? I wondered whether I'd be meeting you here, Potter.
But I thought... Snape!
Severus!
Quirrell laughed, and it wasn't his usual quivering treble either, but cold and sharp.
Yes. Severus does seem the type, doesn't he? So useful to have him swooping around like an overgrown bat. Next to him, who would suspect? Poor stuttering Professor Quirrell.
Harry couldn't take it in. This couldn't be true. It couldn't.
But Snape tried to kill me.
No, no, no. I tried to kill you. Your friend Miss Granger accidentally knocked me over as she rushed to set fire to Snape at that Quidditch match. She broke my eye contact with you. Another few seconds, and I'd have got you off that broom. I'd have managed it before then if Snape hadn't been muttering a counter-curse, trying to save you.
Snape was trying to save me?
Of course. Why do you think he wanted to referee your next match? He was trying to make sure I didn't do it again. It's funny, really. He needn't have bothered. I couldn't do anything with Dumbledore watching. All the other teachers thought Snape was trying to stop Gryffindor winning. He did make himself unpopular. Ah, and what a waste of time when after all that, I'm going to kill you tonight.
Quirrell snapped his fingers. Ropes sprung out of thin air and wrapped themselves tightly around Harry.
You're too nosy to live, Potter. Scurrying around the school at Halloween like that. For all I knew, you'd seen me coming to look at what was guarding the stone.
You let the troll in?
Certainly. I have a special gift with trolls. You must have seen what I did to the one in the chamber back there. Unfortunately, while everyone else was running around looking for it, Snape, who already suspected me, went straight to the third floor to head me off. And not only did my troll fail to beat you to death, that three-headed dog didn't even manage to bite Snape's leg off properly. Now wait quietly, Potter. I need to examine this interesting mirror.
It was only then that Harry realised what was standing behind Quirrell. It was the mirror of Erised.
This mirror is the key to finding the stone,
Quirrell murmured, tapping his way around the frame.
Yes. Trust Dumbledore to come up with something like this. But he's in London. I'll be far away by the time he gets back.
All Harry could think of doing was to keep Quirrell talking and stop him concentrating on the mirror.
I saw you and Snape in the forest.
Yes,
said Quirrell idly, walking around the mirror to look at the back.
He was onto me by that time, trying to find out how far I'd got. He suspected me all along. Tried to frighten me. As though he could, when I had Lord Voldemort on my side.
Quirrell came back out from behind the mirror and stared hungrily into it.
I see the stone. I'm presenting it to my master. Where is it?
Harry struggled against the ropes binding him, but they didn't give. He had to keep Quirrell from giving his whole attention to the mirror.
But Snape always seemed to hate me so much.
Oh, he does. Heavens, yes. He was at Hogwarts with your father, didn't you know? They loathed each other. But he never wanted you dead.
But I heard you a few days ago, sobbing. I thought Snape was threatening you.
For the first time, a spasm of fear flitted across Quirrell's face.
Sometimes, I find it hard to follow my master's instructions. He is a great wizard, and I am weak.
You mean he was there in the classroom with you?
He is with me wherever I go. I met him when I travelled around the world. Foolish young man I was then, full of ridiculous ideas about good and evil. Lord Voldemort showed me how wrong I was. There is no good and evil. There is only power, and those too weak to seek it. Since then, I have served him faithfully, although I've let him down many times. It's had to be very hard on me.
Quirrell shivered suddenly.
He does not forgive mistakes easily. When I failed to steal the stone from Gringotts, he was most displeased. Punished me. Decided he would have to keep a closer watch on me.
Quirrell's voice tailed away. Harry was remembering his trip to Diagon Alley, How could he have been so stupid? He'd seen Quirrell there that very day, shaken hands with him in the leaky cauldron. Quirrell cursed under his breath.
No. I don't understand. Is the stone inside the mirror? Should I break it?
Harry's mind was racing.
What I want more than anything else in the world at the moment,
he thought,
is to find the stone before Quirrell does. So if I look in the mirror, I should see myself finding it, which means I'll see where it's hidden. But how can I look without Quirrell realizing what I'm up to?
He tried to edge to the left, to get in front of the glass without Quirrell noticing, but the ropes around his ankles were too tight. He tripped and fell over. Quirrell ignored him. He was still talking to himself.
What does this mirror do? How does it work? Help me, Master.
And to Harry's horror, a voice answered. And the voice seemed to come from Quirrell himself.
Use the boy! Use the boy!
Quirrell rounded on Harry.
Yes! Potter, come here!
He clapped his hands once, and the ropes binding Harry fell off. Harry got slowly to his feet.
Come here. Look in the mirror and tell me what you see.
Harry walked towards him.
I must lie,
he thought desperately.
I must look and lie about what I see. That's all.
Quirrell moved close behind him. Harry breathed in the funny smell that seemed to come from Quirrell's turban. He closed his eyes, stepped in front of the mirror, and opened them again. He saw his reflection, pale and scared-looking at first. But a moment later, the reflection smiled at him. It put its hand into its pocket and pulled out a blood-red stone. It winked and put the stone back in its pocket. And as it did so, Harry felt something heavy drop into his real pocket. Somehow, incredibly, he'd got the stone.
Well, what do you see?
Harry screwed up his courage.
I see myself shaking hands with Dumbledore,
he invented.
I've won the House Cup for Gryffindor.
Quirrell cursed again.
Get out of the way!
He said. As Harry moved aside, he felt the Sorcerer's Stone against his leg. Dare he make a break for it? But he hadn't walked 5 paces before a high voice spoke, though Quirrell wasn't moving his lips.
He lies! He lies!
Potter! Come back here! Tell me the truth! What did you just see?
The high voice spoke again.
Let me speak to him, face to face.
Master, you are not strong enough.
I have strength enough for this.
Harry felt as if Devil's Snare was rooting him to the spot. He couldn't move a muscle. Petrified, he watched as Quirrell reached up and began to unwrap his turban. What was going on? The turban fell away. Quirrell's head looked strangely small without it. Then he turned slowly on the spot. Harry would have screamed, but he couldn't make a sound. Where there should have been a back to Quirrell's head, there was a face. The most terrible face Harry had ever seen. It was chalk white, with glaring red eyes and slits for nostrils, like a snake.
Harry Potter.
Harry tried to take a step backwards, but his legs wouldn't move.
See what I have become. Mere shadow and vapor. I have form only when I can share another's body. But there have always been those willing to let me into their hearts and minds. Unicorn blood has strengthened me these past weeks. You saw faithful Quirrell drinking it for me in the forest. And once I have the elixir of life, I will be able to create a body of my own. Now, why don't you give me that stone in your pocket?
So he knew. The feeling suddenly surged back into Harry's legs. He stumbled backwards.
Don't be a fool. Better save your own life and join me. Or you'll meet the same end as your parents. They died begging me for mercy.
Liar!
Quirrell was walking backwards at him so that Voldemort could still see him. The evil face was now smiling.
How touching. I always value bravery. Yes, boy. Your parents were brave. I killed your father first, and he put up a courageous fight. But your mother needn't have died. She was trying to protect you. Now, give me the stone. Unless you want her to have died in vain.
Never!
Harry sprang towards the flame door, but Voldemort screamed.
Seize him!
And next second, Harry felt Quirrell's hand close on his wrist. At once, a needle-sharp pain seared across Harry's scar. His head felt as though it was about to split in two. He yelled, struggling with all his might. And to his surprise, Quirrell let go of him. The pain in his head lessened. He looked around wildly to see where Quirrell had gone and saw him hunched in pain, looking at his fingers. They were blistering before his eyes.
Seize him! Seize him!
Shrieked Voldemort again, and Quirrell lunged, knocking Harry clean off his feet. Landing on top of him, both hands around Harry's neck. Harry's scar was almost blinding him with pain, yet he could see Quirrell howling in agony.
Master! I cannot hold it! My hands!
And Quirrell, though pinning Harry to the ground with his knees, let go of his neck and stared bewildered at his own palms. Harry could see they looked burnt, raw, red, and shiny.
Then kill him, fool, and be done!
Quirrell raised his hand to perform a deadly curse, but Harry, by instinct, reached up and grabbed Quirrell's face. Quirrell rolled off him, his face blistering too. And then Harry knew. Quirrell couldn't touch his bare skin, not without suffering terrible pain. His only chance was to keep hold of Quirrell, keep him in enough pain to stop him doing a curse. Harry jumped to his feet, caught Quirrell by the arm, and hung on as tight as he could. Quirrell screamed and tried to throw Harry off. The pain in Harry's head was building. He couldn't see. He could only hear Quirrell's terrible shrieks and Voldemort's yells of
"Kill him! Kill him!"
and other voices, maybe in Harry's own head, crying
"Harry!
Harry!"
He felt Quirrell's arm wrenched from his grasp, knew all was lost, and fell into blackness. Down, down, down. Something gold was glinting just above him. The snitch. He tried to catch it, but his arms were too heavy. He blinked. It wasn't the snitch at all. It was a pair of glasses. How strange. He blinked again. The smiling face of Albus Dumbledore swam into view above him.
Good afternoon, Harry.
Harry stared at him. Then he remembered.
Sir, the stone. It was Quirrell. He's got the stone. Sir, quick!
Calm yourself, dear boy. You are a little behind the times. Quirrell does not have the stone.
Then who does? Sir, I...
Harry, please relax. Or Madame Pomfrey will have me thrown out.
Harry swallowed and looked around him. He realized he must be in the hospital wing. He was lying in a bed with white linen sheets, and next to him was a table piled high with what looked like half the sweet shop.
Tokens from your friends and admirers. What happened down in the dungeons between you and Professor Quirrell is a complete secret, so naturally the whole school knows. I believe your friends, Mr. Fred and George Weasley, were responsible for trying to send you a lavatory seat. No doubt they thought it would amuse you. Madame Pomfrey, however, felt it might not be very hygienic and confiscated it.
How long have I been in here?
3 days. Mr. Ronald Weasley and Miss Granger will be most relieved you've come round. They have been extremely worried.
But, sir, the stone...
I see you are not to be distracted. Very well. The stone. Professor Quirrell did not manage to take it from you. I arrived in time to prevent that. Although you were doing very well on your own, I must say.
You got there. You got Hermione's owl.
We must have crossed in midair. No sooner had I reached London than it became clear to me that the place I should be was the one I'd just left. I arrived just in time to pull Quirrell off you.
It was you.
I feared I might be too late.
You nearly were. I couldn't have kept him off the stone much longer.
Not the stone boy, you. The effort involved nearly killed you. For one terrible moment there, I was afraid it had. As for the stone, it has been destroyed.
Destroyed? But your friend, Nicholas Flamel.
Oh, you know about Nicholas,
said Dumbledore, sounding quite delighted.
You did do the thing properly, didn't you? Well, Nicholas and I have had a little chat and agreed it's all for the best.
But that means he and his wife will die, won't they?
They have enough elixir stored to set their affairs in order, and then, yes, they will die.
Dumbledore smiled at the look of amazement on Harry's face.
To one as young as you, I'm sure it seems incredible. But to Nicholas and Perronel, it really is like going to bed after a very, very long day. After all, to the well-organized mind, death is but the next great adventure. You know, the stone was really not such a wonderful thing. As much money and life as you could want. The two things most human beings would choose above all. The trouble is, humans do have a knack of choosing precisely those things which are worst for them.
Harry lay there, lost for words. Dumbledore hummed a little and smiled at the ceiling.
Sir, I've been thinking. Sir, even if the stone's gone, you know who...
Call him Voldemort, Harry. Always use the proper name for things. Fear of a name increases fear of the thing itself.
Yes, sir. Well, Voldemort's going to try other ways of coming back, isn't he? I mean, he hasn't gone, has he?
No, Harry, he has not. He is still out there somewhere. Perhaps looking for another body to share. Not being truly alive, he cannot be killed. He left Quirrell to die. He shows just as little mercy to his followers as his enemies. Nevertheless, Harry, while you may only have delayed his return to power, it will merely take someone else who is prepared to fight what seems a losing battle next time. And if he is delayed again and again, why, he may never return to power.
Harry nodded, but stopped quickly, because it made his head hurt. Then he said,
Sir, there are some other things I'd like to know, if you can tell me. Things I want to know the truth about.
The truth.
Dumbledore sighed.
It is a beautiful and terrible thing, and should therefore be treated with great caution. However, I shall answer your questions, unless I have a very good reason not to, in which case I beg you'll forgive me. I shall not, of course, lie.
Well, Voldemort said that he only killed my mother because she tried to stop him killing me. But why would he want to kill me in the first place?
Dumbledore sighed very deeply this time.
Alas, the first thing you ask me, I cannot tell you. Not today. Not now. You will know one day. Put it from your mind for now, Harry. When you are older. I know you hate to hear this. When you are ready, you will know.
And Harry knew it would be no good to argue.
But why couldn't Quirrell touch me?
Your mother died to save you. If there is one thing Voldemort cannot understand, it is love. He didn't realize that love, as powerful as your mother's for you, leaves its own mark. Not a scar, no visible sign. To have been loved so deeply, even though the person who loved us is gone, will give us some protection forever. It is in your very skin. Quirrell, full of hatred, greed, and ambition, sharing his soul with Voldemort, could not touch you for this reason. It was agony to touch a person marked by something so good.
Dumbledore now became very interested in a bird out on the windowsill, which gave Harry time to dry his eyes on the sheet. When he had found his voice again, Harry said,
And the invisibility cloak. Do you know who sent it to me?
Ah. Your father happened to leave it in my possession. I thought you might like it.
Dumbledore's eyes twinkled.
Useful things. Your father used it mainly for sneaking off to the kitchens to steal food when he was here.
And there's something else.
Far away.
Quirrell said Snape...
Professor Snape, Harry.
Yes, him. Quirrell said he hates me because he hated my father. Is that true?
Well, they did rather detest each other. Not unlike yourself and Mr. Malfoy. And then your father did something Snape could never forgive.
What?
He saved his life.
What?
Yes. Funny, the way people's minds work, isn't it? Professor Snape couldn't bear being in your father's debt. I do believe he worked so hard to protect you this year because he felt that would make him and your father quits. Then he could go back to hating your father's memory in peace.
Harry tried to understand this, but it made his head pound, so he stopped.
And, sir, there's one more thing.
Just the one?
How did I get the stone out of the mirror?
Ah, now, I'm glad you asked me that. It was one of my more brilliant ideas. And between you and me, that's saying something. You see, only one who wanted to find the stone, find it but not use it, would be able to get it. Otherwise, they'd just see themselves making gold or drinking elixir of life. My brain surprises even me sometimes. Now, enough questions. I suggest you make a start on these sweets. Ah, Bertie Bott's Every Flavor Beans. I was unfortunate enough in my youth to come across a vomit-flavored one, and since then I'm afraid I've rather lost my liking for them. But I think I'll be safe with a nice toffee, don't you?
He smiled and popped the golden brown bean into his mouth. Then he choked and said...
Alas, earwax.
Madame Pomfrey, the matron, was a nice woman, but very strict.
Just 5 minutes.
Absolutely not.
You let Professor Dumbledore in?
Well, of course, that was the headmaster. Quite different. You need rest.
I am resting. Look, lying down and everything. Oh, go on, Madame Pomfrey.
Oh, very well. But 5 minutes only.
And she let Ron and Hermione in.
Harry!
Hermione looked ready to fling her arms around him again, but Harry was glad she held herself in as his head was still very sore.
Oh, Harry! We were sure you were going to... Dumbledore was so worried.
The whole school's talking about it. What really happened?
It was one of those rare occasions when the true story is even more strange and exciting than the wild rumours. Harry told them everything. Quirrell, the mirror, the stone, and Voldemort. Ron and Hermione were a very good audience. They gasped in all the right places, and when Harry told them what was under Quirrell's turban, Hermione screamed out loud.
So the stone's gone. Flamel's just going to die. That's what I said. But Dumbledore thinks that... What was it? To the well-organised mind, death is but the next great adventure.
I always said he was off his rocker,
said Ron, looking quite impressed at how mad his hero was.
So what happened to you two?
Well, I got back all right. I brought Ron round, that took a while, and we were dashing up to the Owlery to contact Dumbledore when we met him in the entrance hall. He already knew. He just said, Harry's gone after him, hasn't he? And hurtled off to the third floor.
Do you think he meant you to do it? Sending you your father's cloak and everything?
Well... If he did, I mean to say, that's terrible. You could have been killed.
No, it isn't. He's a funny man, Dumbledore. I think he sort of wanted to give me a chance. I think he knows more or less everything that goes on here, you know. I reckon he had a pretty good idea we were going to try. Instead of stopping us, he just taught us enough to help. I don't think it was an accident he let me find out how the mirror worked. It's almost like he thought I had the right to face Voldemort if I could.
Yeah. Dumbledore's barking, all right. Listen, you've got to be up for the end-of-year feast tomorrow. The points are all in, and Slytherin won, of course. You missed the last Quidditch match. We were steamrolled by Ravenclaw without you. But the food'll be good.
At that moment, Madame Pomfrey bustled over.
You've had nearly 15 minutes. Now out!
After a good night's sleep, Harry felt nearly back to normal.
I want to go to the feast.
He told Madame Pomfrey as she straightened his many sweet boxes.
I can, can't I?
Professor Dumbledore says you are to be allowed to go,
she said sniffily, as though, in her opinion, Professor Dumbledore didn't realise how risky feasts could be.
And you have another visitor.
Oh, good. Who is it?
Hagrid sidled through the door as he spoke. As usual when he was indoors, Hagrid looked too big to be allowed. He sat down next to Harry, took one look at him, and burst into tears.
It's all my ruddy fault,
he sobbed, his face in his hands.
I told the evil git how to get past Fluffy. I told him it was the only thing he didn't know, and I told him you could have died, all for a dragon egg. I'll never drink again. I should be chucked out and made to live as a muggle.
Hagrid!
Said Harry, shocked to see Hagrid shaking with grief and remorse, great tears leaking down into his beard.
Hagrid! He'd have found out somehow. This is Voldemort we're talking about. He'd have found it even if you hadn't told him.
You could have died. And don't say the name.
Voldemort!
Harry bellowed, and Hagrid was so shocked he stopped crying.
I've met him, and I'm calling him by his name. Please cheer up, Hagrid. We saved the stone. It's gone. He can't use it. Have a chocolate frog. I've got loads.
Hagrid wiped his nose in the back of his hand and said,
that reminds me. I've got you a present.
It's not a stoat sandwich, is it?
Said Harry, anxiously. And at last, Hagrid gave a weak chuckle.
Nah, Dumbledore gave me the day off yesterday to fix it. Of course, he should have sacked me instead. Anyway, got you this.
It seemed to be a handsome, leather-covered book. Harry opened it curiously. It was full of wizard photographs. Smiling and waving at him from every page were his mother and father.
Sent owls off to all your parents' old school friends asking for photos. Knew you didn't have any. Do you like it?
Harry couldn't speak, but Hagrid understood. Harry made his way down to the end-of-year feast alone that night. He had been held up by Madame Pomfrey's fussing about, insisting on giving him one last checkup. So the great hall was already full. It was decked out in the Slytherin colours of green and silver to celebrate Slytherin's winning the House Cup for the 7th year in a row. A huge banner showing the Slytherin serpent covered the wall behind the high table. When Harry walked in, there was a sudden hush, and then everybody started talking loudly at once. He slipped into a seat between Ron and Hermione at the Gryffindor table and tried to ignore the fact that people were standing up to look at him. Fortunately, Dumbledore arrived moments later. The babble died away.
Another year gone. And I must trouble you with an old man's wheezing waffle before we sink our teeth into our delicious feast. What a year it has been. Hopefully your heads are all a little fuller than they were. You have the whole summer ahead to get them nice and empty before next year starts. Now, as I understand it, the House Cup here needs awarding. And the points stand thus. In fourth place, Gryffindor, with 312 points. In third, Hufflepuff, with 352. Ravenclaw have 426, and Slytherin, 472.
A storm of cheering and stamping broke out from the Slytherin table. Harry could see Draco Malfoy banging his goblet on the table. It was a sickening sight.
Yes, yes, well done, Slytherin. However, recent events must be taken into account.
The room went very still. The Slytherin's smiles faded a little.
I have a few last-minute points to dish out. Let me see. Yes. First, to Mr. Ronald Weasley.
Ron went purple in the face. He looked like a radish with bad sunburn.
For the best played game of chess Hogwarts has seen in many years, I award Gryffindor House 50 points.
Gryffindor cheers nearly raise the bewitched ceiling. The stars overhead seem to quiver. Percy could be heard telling the other prefects.
My brother, you know, my youngest brother, got past McGonagall's giant chess set.
At last, there was silence again.
Second, to Miss Hermione Granger for the use of cool logic in the face of fire, I award Gryffindor House 50 points.
Hermione buried her face in her arms. Harry strongly suspected she had burst into tears. Gryffindors up and down the table were beside themselves. They were 100 points up.
Third, to Mr. Harry Potter.
The room went deadly quiet.
For pure nerve and outstanding courage, I award Gryffindor House 60 points.
The din was deafening. Those who could add up while yelling themselves hoarse knew that Gryffindor now had 472 points, exactly the same as Slytherin. They had drawn for the House Cup. If only Dumbledore had given Harry just one more point. Dumbledore raised his hand. The room gradually fell silent.
There are all kinds of courage. It takes a great deal of bravery to stand up to our enemies, but just as much to stand up to our friends. I therefore award 10 points to Mr. Neville Longbottom.
Someone standing outside the Great Hall might well have thought some sort of explosion had taken place. So loud was the noise that erupted from the Gryffindor table. Harry, Ron and Hermione stood up to yell and cheer as Neville, white with shock, disappeared under a pile of people hugging him. He had never won so much as a point for Gryffindor before. Harry, still cheering, nudged Ron in the ribs and pointed at Malfoy, who couldn't have looked more stunned and horrified if he'd just had the bodybind curse put on him.
Which means...
Dumbledore called over the storm of applause, for even Ravenclaw and Hufflepuff were celebrating the downfall of Slytherin.
We need a little change of decoration.
He clapped his hands. In an instant, the green hangings became scarlet and the silver became gold. The huge Slytherin serpent vanished and a towering Gryffindor lion took its place. Snape was shaking Professor McGonagall's hand with a horrible forced smile. He caught Harry's eye, and Harry knew at once that Snape's feelings towards him hadn't changed one jot. This didn't worry Harry. It seemed as though life would be back to normal next year, or as normal as it ever was at Hogwarts. It was the best evening of Harry's life. Better than winning at Quidditch, or Christmas, or knocking out mountain trolls. He would never, ever forget tonight. Harry had almost forgotten that the exam results were still to come. But come they did. To their great surprise, both he and Ron passed with good marks. Hermione, of course, came top of the year. Even Neville scraped through, his good herbology mark making up for his abysmal potions one. They had hoped that Goyle, who was almost as stupid as he was mean, might be thrown out. But he had passed too. It was a shame, but as Ron said, you couldn't have everything in life. And suddenly, their wardrobes were empty. Their trunks were packed. Neville's toad was found lurking in a corner of the toilets. Notes were handed out to all students, warning them not to use magic over the holidays.
I always hope they'll forget to give us these,
said Fred Weasley, sadly. Hagrid was there to take them down to the fleet of boats that sailed across the lake. They were boarding the Hogwarts Express, talking and laughing as the countryside became greener and tidier, eating Bertie Bott's every flavour beans as they sped past Muggle towns, pulling off their wizard robes and putting on jackets and coats, pulling into platform 9 3/4 at King's Cross Station. It took quite a while for them all to get off the platform. A wizened old guard was up by the ticket barrier, letting them go through the gate in twos and threes so they didn't attract attention by all bursting out of the solid wall at once and alarming the Muggles.
You must come and stay this summer. Both of you. I'll send you an owl.
Thanks. I'll need something to look forward to.
People jostled them as they moved forwards towards the gateway back to the Muggle world. Some of them called,
"Bye, Harry!
See you, Potter!"
"Still famous,"
said Ron, grinning at him.
"Not where I'm going, I promise you."
He, Ron and Hermione passed through the gateway together.
"There he is, Mum! There he is! Look!"
"Shh!"
It was Ginny Weasley, Ron's younger sister. But she wasn't pointing at Ron.
"Harry Potter! Look, Mum, I can see..."
"Be quiet, Ginny, and it's rude to point."
Mrs. Weasley smiled down at them.
"Busy, eh?"
"Very." "Thanks for the fudge and the jumper, Mrs. Weasley."
"Oh, it was nothing, dear."
"Ready, are you?"
It was Uncle Vernon. Still purple-faced, still moustached, still looking furious at the nerve of Harry, carrying an owl in a cage in a station full of ordinary people. Behind him stood Aunt Petunia and Dudley, looking terrified at the very sight of Harry.
"You must be Harry's family."
"In a manner of speaking. Hurry up, boy. We haven't got all day."
He walked away. Harry hung back for a last word with Ron and Hermione.
"See you over the summer, then.
I hope you have a good holiday,"
said Hermione, looking uncertainly after Uncle Vernon, shocked that anyone could be so unpleasant.
"Oh, I will,"
said Harry, and they were surprised at the grin that was spreading over his face.
"They don't know we're not allowed to use magic at home. I'm going to have a lot of fun with Dudley this summer."
Been listening to Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, written by J.K. Rowling, co-produced by Pottermore Publishing and Audible Studios, narrated by Kush Jumbo, OBE, starring Frankie Treadaway as Harry Potter, Max Lester as Ron Weasley, Arabella Stanton as Hermione Granger, Hugh Laurie as Albus Dumbledore, Michelle Gomez as Minerva McGonagall, Mark Addy as Rubius Hagrid, Sasha Dewan as Quirinus Quirrell, Nina Wadia as Molly Weasley, Joel Fry as Charlie Weasley, Riz Ahmed as Severus Snape, Matthew McFadden as Voldemort. Also starring Adil Akhtar as Argus Filch, Bumble Clark as Ginny Weasley, Jaden Desange as Dudley Dursley, Lennon Shea Doyle as Seamus Finnegan, Jude Farrant as Draco Malfoy, Heaven Harriet as Pansy Parkinson, Marley Ray Hunt as Angelina Johnson, Lenny James as the Sorting Hat, Joseph Obasohan as Lee Jordan, Hamish Lloyd Barnes as Fred and George Weasley, Stephen Mangan as Nearly Headless Nick, Tracy Ann Oberman as Rolanda Hooch, Dre Ollie as Dean Thomas, Nigel Pilkington as Peeves, Fergus Rattigan as Phileas Flitwick, Mitchell Robertson as Oliver Wood, Rebecca Root as Poppy Pomfrey, Hugh Ross as Garrick Ollivander, Tom Royal as Percy Weasley, Jake Sigsworth as Neville Longbottom, Jeremy Swift as Vernon Dursley, Indira Varma as Petunia Dursley, Sasha Watson-Lobo as Parvati Patil, and Sarah Whitehouse as the Fat Lady. And featuring David Ahmad as Wizarding Street 2, Tom Alexander as Ronan, Philip Arditti as Book About Nicholas Flamel, Rachel Atkins as Augusta Longbottom, Ewan Bailey as Goblin 1, Tia Bannon as Doris Crockford, Nicholas Bolton as Ted the Newsreader, Laurence Bouvard as Hotel Owner, Dougie Brownwood as Vincent Crabbe, Doc Butler as Griphook, Margaret Caborn-Smith as Hogwarts Express Trolley Witch, Ian Conningham as Wizarding Street 1, Celia DeWolf as Madame Malkin, Patch Dillon as Broomstick Boy, Matt Fraser as Dawes and Card, Gene Fode as Tom the Leaky Cauldron Landlord, Edward Froud as Piers Polkiss and Whispering Student 3, Aaron Garland as Marcus Flint, Pete Gold as Wizarding Alley 1, Chris Lu Kum Hoi as The Daily Prophet, David Holt as Train Announcement, Oscar Hubble as Gregory Goyle, Damian Lynch as Ferenz, Finbar Lynch as The Fat Friar, Gerard McDermott as Zookeeper, Claire Morgan as Woman Outside an Apothecary, Yasmin Mwanza as Irma Pince, Nigel Pilkington as Gringotts Spokesgoblin, Carl Prekop as Bane and Snake, Sule Rimi as Wizard in Alley 2, Adam Samuel Ball as Jim McGuffin the Weatherman, Maxim Samitis as Departing Student 2, Paul J. Smith as Letter, Andrew James Spooner as Daedalus Diggle, Zane Squirrel as Sorting Student 1, Dan Starkey as Chess Pieces, Ash Noblestein as Whispering Student 1 and Departing Student 1, Poppy Wilson as Sorting Student 2 and Whispering Student 2, and Rufus Wright as List. Additional voices by Tom Alexander, Ajaz Howard, Fionn Bambury, Oliver Brady, Lydia Brownell, Molly Casserly, Gabriel Clapson, Ian Conningham, Amy Cudden, Jessica Dennis, Patch Dillon, Gianluca DiCorrado, Dylan Ennis, Jason Forbes, Sarah Golding, Pete Gold, Mia Haynes-French, Sebastian Halford, Oscar Hubble, Sydney Jackson, Twinkle Jaswal, Kiva Judd, Simon Kane, Harriet Kershaw, Max McIntosh, Fizz Marcus, Deborah Michaels, Lise Mick, Claire Morgan, Yasmin Mwanza, Iris Moss, Harry Myers, Muirin Niagon, Evan Ovenel, Catherine Phillips, Austin Phelan, John Sackville, Maya Shepalev, Jayesh Sidpra, Ravi Sidpra, Betsy Pearl Smedley, Andrew James Spooner, Sam Stafford, Brianna Squirrel, Harry Tuffin, Joe Troy, Harriet Turnbull, Rhea Vias, Poppy Wilson, and Sarah Whitehouse. With thanks to the stand-in actors, Tom Alexander, Harry Myers, Sarah Whitehouse, Jessica Dennis, Jason Forbes, Simon Kane, Yasmin Mwanza, Nigel Pilkington, Andrew James Spooner, and Sam Stafford. The performance directors were David Beck, Nicolette Chin, Tamsin Collison, Celia DeWolf, Jan Hayden Rolls, Daniel Jewell, Olivia Landsberg, Neil Mossy, and Bethany Wymers. The performance continuity supervisor was Eleanor Mine. Casting led by Marielle Runacre-Temple, CDG, and Nicola Wall, CDG. Supporting adult casting by David Beck, Emma Hearn, CDG, and Jada Azun for Wireless Theatre. Young performer casting by Amelia Oliver, Daniela Spataru, Grace Hopkins, James Nicolau, and Ilaria Smedeli for 2020 recordings. Additional casting by Alex Curran. The recording engineers were Luke Farnell, Sid Glover, John Hux, Laura Iredale, Martha James, Darren Jones, Jamie McAvoy, Shane O'Byrne, and Miles Weeway. The script supervisors were Louis Blatherwick, Lydia Brownell, Phoebe Critchlow, Anna DeWolf Evans, Cara Dromgoole, Ellie Ekers, Teresa Maleski, Catherine Phillips, and Joe Troy. The lead script supervisor was Lise Mick. The runners were Lydia Brownell, Cara Dromgoole, Teresa Maleski, Molly Morgan Keeley, and Catherine Phillips. The vocal coach was Jan Hayden Rolls. With thanks to Stammer, the British Stammering Association, for their consultation and guidance. Original score written and produced by Nithin Sawhney. Additional score and music editing by Harry Timson and James Turner. Music supervision by Resistor. The music supervisors were Hannah Charman, Holly Hutton, and Imogen Pring. For the main theme, orchestra recorded at Air Studios, Lyndhurst Hall. The musician contractor was Sophie Proctor for Hilary Skews & Co. The conductor was Andrew Skeet. The score prep and librarian was Jill Streeter. The recording engineer was Alex Ferguson. The Pro Tools operator was Jack Mills. And the assistant engineers were Ashley Andrew Jones and Joey Price. Additional music by WMP. The managing director was Ben McAvoy. The composers were Will Featherby, Ben McAvoy, and Kezia Thompson. And the co-writers were Ashley Griffin and Peter Yelland Brown. Location recording by Will Cohen, Joe Evans, George Hinson, Lawrence Kendrick, Shane O'Byrne, and Miles Weeway. With thanks to the staff and students of Leytonstone School. Dialogue editing by 2020 Recordings. The dialogue supervisors were Johnny Firth and Liam Proctor. The production coordinators were Amelia Oliver and Grace Hopkins, and the production assistant was Vanessa Calderon. The senior dialogue editors were Ben Firth, Charlie Brahm, Eddie Dobson, and Tashari King. The dialogue editors were Oliver Denman, Laura Iredale, Ruth Knight, Diana Nemirovska, Tom Knott, Christian Pchihotsky, James Trusson, and Jake Whitlin. With additional dialogue editing by Audible. The creative edit supervisor was Emma Budd. The creative dialogue editor was Stephen Little. Recorded at Audible Studios, London, with additional recordings at 2020 Recordings, Films at 59, Fitzrovia Post, Lightyear Studios, Sonica Studios, Sound Lounge, Sound Nest Studios, String and Tins, and Studio 126. Sound design by String and Tins. The sound supervisors were Will Cohen and Lawrence Kendrick. The executive audio producer was Rachel Hoff. The audio producers were Ema Gori, Ellie Hook, and Jen Kennedy. The audio post-production technician was George Hinson. The technical assistants were Adam Hare and Jonathan Williams. The audio production assistant was Amber Fretton, and the runner was Joe Evans. The sound designers were Casper Broyd, Peter Doggett, Kevin Langhammer, Phil Lee, Damian Pace, Chris Southwell, and Jim Stewart. The conform engineers were Ryan Hatton, George Hinson, Rick Morris, and Vincent Salguero. Foley by Phonic. The director was Barnaby Templer. The project lead was Cecile Janet. The project producer was Eugenie Dunster. The creative consultant was Sophia Hartman. The assistant was Stephen Maxwell. And the Foley spotting editor was Will Thomas. The Foley editors were J.M. Finch, Cecile Janet, and Christopher Swain. The lead Foley artists were Sue Harding and Andrea King. And supporting Foley artists were Paula Borum, Ricky Butt, Ben Jones, and Ruth Sullivan. The Foley recordists were Sophia Hartman, Cecile Janet, Belle Jones, and Stephen Maxwell. Mixed by Forever Audio. The head of production was Sam Dillon. The head of engineering was Rob Baker. And the senior producer was Gabriel Dutroux. The sound engineers were Alistair Bolt, Adam Deveni, Claudia Casasola, Billy Rose Hamilton, Tom Ryan, and James Trusson. Audio proofing by Shaka Sonic. The proofing program coordinator was Michael Kaluzinski. The audio proofers were Yvette Deschamps, Katerina Georgievich, Ugo Hewlett, and Luis Huesca. For Pottermore, with thanks to Luke Barnard, the production interns were John Kamara and Taja Wright Mason. The production assistants were Will Greensides and Melissa Paris. The production coordinators were Beth Tingey and Saoirse Watchhorn. The post-production director was Jake Roberts. The production director was Laura Kirker. The executive producers were Anna Hutton and Anne Scantlebury. And the commissioning editor was Jenny McCann. For Audible, with thanks to Katie Arlett, the production coordinators were Harrison Feltham and Beth Massey. The studio manager was Francesca Edwards. The studio director was Tom Hand. The post-production directors were Alice Hewer and Stuart McCowan. The production directors were Haley Nathan, Marielle Runica-Temple, and Nicola Wall. And the executive producers were Aurélie de Troyer and Chris Jones. Text copyright J.K. Rowling 1997 and recording copyright J.K. Rowling 2025. Harry Potter and related trademarks, characters, names, and indicia are trademark and copyright Warner Brothers Entertainment Incorporated. Harry Potter publishing and theatrical stage rights are copyright J.K. Rowling. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this programme.